heard about race and place, the last component of our presentation today will now focus on gender. And so I work with Adeline Yerkes and Joan Ware on gestational diabetes. And so I'll begin a presentation that will serve as an introduction for their discussion. Again, I'm Michelle Owens Gary. I'm at CDC. I'm a behavioral scientist in the Division of Diabetes Translation. And so we'll talk about diabetes. Why is it a women's health issue? And I have no relationships to disclose. So just as an overview, we all know about diabetes and the three C's. It's common, costly, and chronic, requiring significant changes for individuals. Whoever has diabetes, they must change, as well as their families must change, to incorporate diabetes into their lives for a healthier lifestyle. We know from some recent research from our colleagues at CDC that the lifetime risk for diabetes is about the same for men and women, 40.2%. And 39.6% for men and for women. But we've also seen an increase in the diagnosis of diabetes for incidence, and that's increased for all ages, sex, race, and ethnicity, where there's been a decline in mortality. But when we look at diabetes, all things are not equal, and so we know that women are impacted differently than men when they have diabetes. And so just one example that we wanted to share was that when you look at cardiovascular disease, it does not impact women the same as it impacts men. So when women have heart disease, as an example, they tend to have poorer quality of life, and their survival skills are less, survival rates are less than those of men. We also know that diabetes is a woman's health issue because diabetes impacts women during pregnancy. And these numbers that I'm sharing with you can change. It depends on the guidelines that you use. But on a very low estimate, we believe that diabetes can impact 240,000 pregnancies. Again, that number could be much higher. Just depends on which guidelines you're looking at. And so our concerns with gestational diabetes are that they can impact the pregnancy in terms of complications for the mother and for the baby. And so that can lead to preeclampsia. It can lead to a large for gestational age baby, which then results in cesarean sections, as well as there's a risk for infections. And so this infographic just shows you on a low estimate as well, the number of women who may be affected by gestational diabetes. It shows that every year, 1 in 18 pregnant women will develop gestational diabetes. There's also a cycle. So if a mother has diabetes and has a baby, a female baby grows up, becomes pregnant, she's at risk for having gestational diabetes. And then if she has a child, that child is also at risk. So there is an intergenerational factor that we're trying to prevent to make sure that women do not go on to get gestational diabetes and then the risk for type 2 diabetes. So GDM, women need to know that there's a lifelong risk for type 2, but as you'll hear in a few minutes from Joan and Adeline, many women leave the hospital not knowing that they're at risk for their entire lives, as well as their child, of developing type 2 diabetes. The research tells us that up to 1/3 of women will develop type 2 when screened postpartum. And also up to 60% will develop type 2 10 years after the index pregnancy. And so this slide just shows you again on a low estimate level every year how many women will have type 2 diabetes after pregnancy. So what are some of the problems and concerns with gestational diabetes management and self-care? One of the major concerns that you'll hear about from Joan and Adeline is that there's a lack of consistent documentation for gestational diabetes. So if a mother tells us on some national data sets that she self-reports having had gestational diabetes, we may not find it in the birth certificates or medical records. Well, why is that a concern? If it's not documented, then she may not receive the appropriate screening and testing for type 2 diabetes. So that can increase the risk for GDM occurring again, as well as the risk for type 2 diabetes, if there are no interventions. And so we know that gestational diabetes is a warning, as well at the same time as an opportunity. It's a warning that we should take action as healthcare professionals to prevent type 2 diabetes. It's also an opportunity to encourage women to be involved in primary prevention changes and strategies. So helping women to learn more about how to eat healthy, being more physically active, and losing weight. And so we know from some of the recent research that's been done on diabetes prevention programs that women were involved in these clinical trials, and they received interventions to reduce their risk for type 2 diabetes. The women received standard lifestyle intervention with placebo, metformin, or intensive lifestyle intervention. And what it found was that women who had gestational diabetes had a 50% reduction in their incidence for type 2 diabetes in that clinical trial. And so what are our thoughts about that study? It shows that if we have appropriate diagnosis and documentation of GDM, we can have interventions that will work for these women. We need to increase education and lifestyle changes for these women to make sure that they are aware of the risk that they have over their entire lifetime. We need to better understand how GDM is managed in practices. What are doctors doing? What are healthcare professionals doing to help women who have gestational diabetes to learn about their risk? And what are they doing to intervene early to help them prevent type 2? So we need to help women know more, educate them more about gestational diabetes and the risk for type 2. We need to increase communication and collaboration across providers so that when a woman leaves the OBGYN, she may not go back to an OBGYN unless she becomes pregnant again. So there needs to be cross-collaboration from OBGYNs to primary care providers. Again, we need to equip women with tools to make sure they have the increased knowledge for self-care, for themselves and for their families, and then again, get them into lifestyle programs. CDC has started the National Diabetes Prevention Program, which links healthcare and community sectors. It's a 16-week program with 6 weeks for follow-up sessions. So they focus on physical activity, healthy eating, and weight loss, and provide trained life coaches. They also teach individuals how to have better lifestyle skills and coping skills when trying to manage conditions that may lead them to having chronic diseases. And so this slide just shows you the four components of the National Diabetes Prevention Program. There's a need to have training to increase the workforce. There's a need to have a recognition program to make sure that the programs are of quality and that we can assure that there is quality. We need to have intervention sites that can deliver the program, and also we need to market the program so people know that they actually exist. And so this slide shows you a map of where there are currently national diabetes prevention programs throughout the country. The map is already outdated, so we're happy to say that because there are much more, but we still need to have many more NDPP programs out there. And so the National Diabetes Prevention Program, it encourages collaboration because we know that CDC cannot do this kind of work by ourselves. We need to have other federal agencies working with us, along with community-based organizations, employers, insurers, and healthcare professionals. Again, as I mentioned, there are programs in many states, but we need the work from many other people as well. If you want to learn more about the National Diabetes Prevention Program, the website is listed there for you. It's cdc.gov/diabetes. And so now we'll hear more from Adeline Yerkes and Joan Ware about the Gestational Diabetes Collaborative, which serves as a nice segue to get women into a lifestyle program. They will focus on the work that we've done to better understand GDM prevalence, identify gaps in data quality and documented care, and then the work that we've done to develop interventions to improve access to care and postpartum follow-up. She retired in 2005 from the Utah Department of Health. Currently, Joan is a consultant to the National Association of Chronic Disease Directors Women's Health Council, partnering with CDC's Division of Diabetes Translation and Reproductive Health. State Chronic Disease, Maternal Child Health, and Pregnancy Risk Assessment Monitoring System Program Directors, and the Association of Maternal Child Health Programs to promote early prevention of type 2 diabetes and other chronic diseases through collaboration and integration of public health services and programs. And Adeline Yerkes serves as a women's health consultant for the National Association of Chronic Disease Directors. She's currently working on projects related to maternal child health, program directors, and chronic disease directors, collaboration, and gestational diabetes quality improvement projects. Adeline serves on the steering committee for the Region 6 Women's Health Alliance member, and she's on the board for the Health Alliance for the Underserved. She has over 50 years of experience in community health, from school nursing, visiting nursing, occupational nursing, public health nursing, and public health administration. Please help me welcome Joan Ware and Adeline Yerke.
Okay, so how do I move this along?
You could just push the down arrow.
Okay. Good morning. I always screw everything up, so I'm warning you ahead of time. And right now, this is the perfect time for prevention of type 2 diabetes by taking better care of our women with GDM. I'm pressing the down arrow.
Okay.
And nothing is happening. It knows.
Wow.
I told you.
So that worked for me. I don't know why, but try that one.
All right. I have no relationship to disclose either, except with my co-consultant and my boss. Okay. Those of you who don't know what the National Association of Chronic Disease Directors is, it's a group of all the chronic disease staff from our states and territories working to prevent chronic disease. Has about 1,000 members. If you wanted to reach people in states with diabetes, NACDD is the way to go. One push button and we can get you to all of them. So it's a great organization. We're funded by CDC to provide technical assistance to 9 states and 4 tribes to work on gestational diabetes. Adeline and I are joined at the hip. It says on our program that we have 3 areas for management of diabetes: the individual and the family, community, the health providers, and then the community and the health systems. Well, I maintain that we have 4. Surveillance. The work that we've done over the past 6 years has shown us that if you don't have good surveillance, it's going to impact management of everything. We started out trying to decide the size of the problem. So we looked at data sources for our states so that they could describe it to their board and, you know, get funded and really do something. And we found out that even within the great CDC, depending on who you asked, we had a different prevalence rate for GDM. So we did a validation study, and we looked at the Pregnancy Risk Assessment Management System from MCH, from Reproductive Health, PRAMS. We looked at birth certificates, and we looked at hospital records. And we learned a lot. We learned that there's a lot lacking. We learned that documentation should be everything, and it's missing a great deal of the time. We learned that birth certificates, people are supposed to be using the 2003 version. Well, at the end of 2012, we still have only 38 states using the 2003 birth certificate. And for us, this is critical because it differentiates between GDM and regular and type 2 and diabetes in general. So it's important. That's one problem, and other data are missing also. And Michelle spoke to the fact that depending on your diagnostic criteria, it affects the prevalence rate of GDM. And we have 3 great organizations: the World Health Organization, American Diabetes Association, and the National Institutes of Health, all with different diagnostic criteria. So depending on who you use, that's another different prevalence rate. We learned when we looked at the hospital records that there's a severe lack of documentation. 26% of our hospital records we looked at had no record of a test, or if they had the test, they didn't have the results. So for 25% of the folks, we didn't know whether or not they had gestational diabetes. We had another 16% lacking follow-up. Yeah, they did the test, but no results. We don't know whether it was confirmed. And most of all, we found that 38% of our birth certificates did not have gestational diabetes indicated on it, but they did have it in the medical record. So if you use birth certificates for prevalence, you would be missing almost 40% of the women with diabetes. So what does this mean? These missing pieces of elements are very serious from public health perspective, because it helps that we don't have appropriate data. But even worse than that, women are not getting the right information. If she doesn't have the diagnosis on her chart, she's not going to get the information about what this diagnosis means. She's not going to know at what risk she has. She's not going to know about the risk for her offspring. She's not going to know what she needs to do after she delivers, how she's going to reduce her risk, how she's going to reduce the risk for her offspring. This will all go. So the problem is, how are you going to manage a condition if you don't know the condition exists? So that has a huge impact on management. So for our first intervention, we wanted to increase the accuracy of the diagnosis on the birth certificates. And Utah GDM collaborative team did a great job with this. They got together with their vital records folks, their MCH folks, their diabetes folks, and developed a training program for hospital clerks throughout the state to show them how data collection could be made and translated onto the birth certificate, and also why it was so important. They changed the way they collected the data. They developed a question about GDM on the maternal worksheet. They did a pop-up on the data entry. The clerk had to confirm in the medical record whether or not there was a GDM diagnosis. Within the first year, they increased the recording documentation of GDM on the birth certificate by 30% in the first year. So that's a pretty good improvement for us. What we learned, and we learned also that now that we're having the woman properly diagnosed, she has the information, how do we get postpartum follow-up? We know that less than 50% of the women with GDM receive a postpartum visit. Our OBGYNs have not been trained to let them know about their risk and ensure that they get in with the primary provider for long-term follow-up. We learned from BRFS that women with a history of GDM get less information about physical activity and weight management than women without GDM. So right there, the two things that will help her reduce her risk: lifestyle change and long-term follow-up, looking for an abnormal glucose level, are not being performed. Women do not know that if they had gestational diabetes, they have prediabetes. The new division is focusing, the new standards for your division is focusing on prediabetes, and we are saying gestational diabetes is prediabetes. It needs to be included. 240,000 high-risk women, 240,000 high-risk offspring. We really need to pay attention to this. And women do not understand that they have a lifetime risk. So we want to prevent 70% of these women from converting. We need to pay more attention to them early. So our strategy was just a simple one. Let's get them in for at least one test postpartum. Utah, Oklahoma, and North Carolina, where our team's working on this. And they did a very simple thing. They developed a mail-out packet to women who said on their maternal worksheet that they had gestational diabetes. And this slide has a picture of Utah's packet information. It has a card for recording their appointments. It has suggestions for questions to ask their doctor or provider, and a refrigerator magnet with tips on healthy weight management and physical activity. They mail this to all the moms and was mailed out within 2 weeks of their delivery. Looking at it, a year later, they found that they'd increased from 38% to 58% women getting a postpartum test, which is about a 35% increase. And they just completed a follow-up study to check to see, did the follow-up materials actually change behavior? 58% of the women said yes, it was a major feature in their getting their postpartum test. What is still distressing is that the 41% of the women who did not get the test said they did not get it because their provider did not order it for them. Another 16% said they just didn't know that they needed it. We need to do a lot more education, not only for our moms, but for our providers as well. And these are interventions that really didn't cost very much, but have a significant impact. So local health departments and state health departments can be very helpful and can interface on a clinical level and make a difference. Now, Adeline's going to give you some other examples of some other interventions that have been very successful.
Which one did you wish it was successful?
This one.
Not right.
But I don't know if it'll work for you.
Okay. What did you do to the machine?
The same thing I always do.
Okay. All right. She said we were attached at the hip, and I sometimes think that's true because sometimes when she does things and then I turn around to do it too, that you know we have the same similar problems. So let's see what worked. Oh, it worked. Okay. Another one of our strategies, and this really combines two strategies, but because of the limited time frame, I put both of the strategies together. And this was to improve care and impact prevention of type 2 diabetes in a variety of settings. And as you can see from this, we used as many of the clinical care settings that we could to increase either provider education or patient education to improve care and impact the prevention of type 2 diabetes. Among some of the issues related to what we have been talking about, Joan related to you some of the issues around the fact that in this project in Utah, 41% of the women stated that their physician or their provider, healthcare provider, had not recommended that they have a postpartum intervention. So with that then, we were able to... we'll talk about that. When a woman has a delivery, she should receive a message when she leaves the delivery site that she should have a postpartum visit within 6 weeks of the delivery. At that time, at that 6 weeks delivery visit, postpartum delivery visit, she should receive the glucose screen. That is a national standard if she is a woman with gestational diabetes. And also, just as a reminder, if the woman's care is paid for by Medicaid, Medicaid will only pay for that 6 weeks postpartum visit if it's within the 6 weeks period of time. And so that is a major issue because a lot of these women do not get back in that 6 weeks period, so therefore the test is not paid for if the facility does the test at a later time. So we talked about that the providers need some additional education. We found that when we did some of this information, we actually looked at each one of the projects, looked at their provider base. Some validation assessments were done, and we found that many of the providers were unaware of what screening procedure or criteria they should use, and they were also unaware of the significance of doing the the glucose screen at the 6 weeks postpartum visit. So one of the things that we talked about doing, and the many of the states did, was develop some type of intervention around provider education. And as you can see from this listing, one state developed a consensus set of guidelines for pre-pregnancy or preconception care, then what to do during the pregnancy as far as diabetes management was concerned, and then how to do the postpartum screening and follow-up. So that they developed over a period of a couple of years, among with their coalitions, a consensus statement for healthcare providers to follow. A number of states did either webinars, videos, or internet training for their providers, and they might have done it in a variety of settings, either like at their state meetings or actually at perinatal meetings. Some of their, also their infant their children's coalitions and that kind of thing. They took all types of opportunities to improve their provider base as far as their knowledges and skills were concerned around gestational diabetes. And then a couple of states actually did both provider and public summits so that their provider bases would have greater knowledge, but they involved women in those at the same time so that a number of the women then could help carry that message out also. Now, we also did some health system interventions to also improve the systems around with providers and to improve the care for women. A number of them looked at their whole cornucopia of services from when the woman comes in for her first prenatal visit all the way through her care. And for a number of these projects, they had the electronic medical record. Now, what we found is that maybe the electronic medical record had one spot where it said, did you screen for GDM? Or maybe there might have been in the template, did the woman have a history of GDM? But the template did not follow through with the rest of the activities that needed to be done. If it said the woman had a history, did she get, you know, the template didn't say, did she get screened? And if she got screened, was it normal or abnormal? And if it was abnormal, what she needed to be done as far as referred for diabetes management and diabetes self-care education that was needed during the pregnancy. And then most of the, we did not find a single electronic medical system that actually had this screened on the postpartum visit. In the electronic medical systems that we looked at. Now, that wasn't all of them, because there's a number of systems out there. But of those that actually had the electronic medical records within the states and the tribes that we used, none of them had anything about postpartum. So we helped them take their templates and modify the templates to include those. So we did learn some of those things from that. And several of the states and tribes actually then put together more of an emphasis on the postpartum. As you heard Joan say, and as you also heard Dr. Owen say, we have only 50% of these women getting a postpartum visit, and then even less of them getting the postpartum screen. So a number of the interventions were added so that this type 2 diabetes prevention education was made so that it could flow right afterwards. So as soon as she delivered, she received a referral to a system where she could maybe get some diabetes primary prevention, or she could actually be enfolded in some of the other types of prevention programs or educational programs or lifestyle programs that they had available to them. And as you can see, we had four tribal units that we were involved in, and all four tribal units had the capacity to do that and have been doing that. We also added gestational diabetes to diabetes registries because they had not been added before. And now when we look at the patient education tools, a number of the providers told us that they did not have the proper educational tools to educate the women on gestational diabetes. And so all of the projects put together a state website or added to their own state website a section on gestational diabetes and put on those websites what materials were then available, and many of them then made additional or developed additional educational materials for patients to use. And then the tribes did interfaces with wellness programs and tried to develop unique tools and educational materials for their tribal members. We also made sure that everyone thought about the culture that they were working in. The various levels in all of the various states were very different. We also had literacy issues. As we talked to these women and as the states looked at their population base, they understood that the health literacy levels as far as what to do for gestational diabetes was low. So the fact sheets, the magnets, the brochures, everything was made so that it was culturally and literacy appropriate for them. And all of the 13 projects developed at least one educational tool. Number of them did messaging that could be done on television or messaging that could be done on the internet and that type of thing. What we learned from this is that when projects worked in the clinical setting as an integrated team, that means that the physicians, the nurse practitioners, the midwives, the health educators, the nutritionists, if everyone worked as a team, and we also involved WIC in a number of these, that we could increase the education about gestational diabetes, and we could decrease the time where the woman was able to achieve glucose control. And this was significant for the woman, because then it said that during her pregnancy, she had good glucose control, therefore she had good outcomes. And so in these states and in these tribes, the majority of these women had a normal size delivery. They did not have the delivery that exceeded the 9 pounds, which is very significant when it comes time for birth injuries and both women's outcomes as well as the infant's outcome. As we talked about, electronic medical records need templates. They do increase the awareness of gestational diabetes across the span from preconception care all the way through the postpartum period and into the next preconception phase. The nurse practitioners, the midwives, and the other members were likely to change their templates to be more inclusive than the physicians, but each professional along the line has the right to develop their own templates. So we do need a standard template nationally to address gestational diabetes so that it is addressed along the whole spectrum. Whoops. We found that providers and patients think that gestational diabetes and even preeclampsia are temporary issues, and that they go away when the pregnancy is finished. That's not true. These women are at greater risk for type 2 diabetes if they have preeclampsia and gestational diabetes together. They're 18 times more likely to have type 2 diabetes in the near future, if not right after the pregnancy. And they're much more likely to have an early stroke or an early heart attack. So these women have considerable complications, and we also found that, as has been said before, their offspring are at greater risk. We also found that women with low literacy and lack of language proficiency can be reached via telemedicine. And so the last part of this is about a telemedicine intervention that was done in one state. Arkansas chose telemedicine as their way of doing things because they have a number of counties in two areas of their state where they lack providers to do deliveries. These women must go out of state to deliver or go across state lines to deliver. So, and they also lack providers to do the education. There are no diabetes management courses in the area too. So they decided to develop a telemedicine effort to see if they could reach these women and give them better information about their gestational diabetes. They worked with the University Medical Center They developed an educational 1.5-hour seminar that included gestational diabetes overall and emphasis more on some of the areas related to gestational diabetes. It was done in both English and Spanish. There were 24 women who of English speaking that completed the course, 31 of Spanish speaking who completed the course. The curriculum emphasized the need for breastfeeding and glucose control in that hour and a half. And then each time the woman then came in, either the nurse practitioner or the midwives reviewed the materials and the information and did additional education with them to impact and to better have diabetes control and management. And we thank you. To better get out the word about gestational diabetes and the various websites, we have put on some of the chairs and in the back, there's bookmarks that show both our diabetes project with the National Diabetes or the National Chronic Disease Association, and then the National Diabetes Education Program, and then the Primary Prevention Program websites also. So those are available for people.
Thank you to both Joan and Adeline, and thank you to all the panelists for today's presentations. We do have about 15 minutes for any questions that you may have.
Yes.
Provided it, but with our project that we had, each state received some dollars to work on an intervention, and these dollars from that project paid for part of it. But the state also matched it, and the university matched it. So with the partner collaboration, then they were able to do a bigger project. If they just used the dollars that we gave them, they would have only been able to reach two counties. This way they were able to reach about 13 counties overall.
The meaningful use act, section 1562 of Affordable Care, does that discuss anything in terms of EMR implementation or notifications for gestational diabetes? Is there anything you know about that in terms of is they use of that in the EMR?
Yeah. Well, I know that the act is supposed to involve the use of EMRs. But I'm not sure. I know that there is money available to improve EMRs, but I'm not sure that EMRs are being improved in that direction, so to speak. I think that a lot of it's being used for other aspects of the EMR to improve the EMR in other ways.
Yes.
It's been my state's experience when we try to put GDM on the EMR. A lot of people are fighting to have us take information off rather than put it on. It's really been a struggle.
Yes.
Thank you.
diabetes. You're funded.
That's the challenge with gestational diabetes, yeah.
Primarily in the United States, we use two different levels. The one that is promoted by ACOG, or the, and then the one that's promoted by ADA. The ADA one is the HAPO study. The ACOG one is the Kustin, can't think of the other cousins, protocol that's been used for years.
And also just endorsed by the National Institutes of Health in their most recent consensus panel. The problem is, in general practice, if you're using data, clinical data, you may not know what standard you're using, but we found that most clinicians are using the ADA because it's 75 grams one trip. ACOG is two tests, a 1 hour and a 3 hour, and moms just won't go back for that 3 hour, and I don't blame them, I wouldn't either. So, and if you're in hard to reach populations, have to drive 30 and 40 miles, you know they're not going to come back. So, yeah, that's why it's such a horrible problem. And unless you know where the data came from, you have no idea what the standard was. And most people in the hospital, when I ask, what do you use it for a diagnostic criteria, look at me like I had just spoken in Greek.
Okay.
So that is a real problem.
Yes.
Should just let them go.
Right, I mean, that's crazy.
I agree with you. And the clinicians agree with you, too.
And depending on your population base, it may not be that great, because we, in some of the areas that have actually used the one step, their population has not increased to 18%. Arkansas did change, and I believe they are showing close to 14 to 16% being their population, but previous to that, they had 11% increase. So it wasn't an 18% increase on top of that. It went from 11% to 16. So I mean, but I do know that they, and then I know some of the others have done some things too. So none of them, I don't think, have actually reached that 18%. But that's what the model showed if you actually used it.
I'm sorry, D, and then the lady in pink, D. We don't have that data yet. They're still enrolling women as well as all individuals with prediabetes into the program. So, and there are programs that are up and running now, but we don't have that data at this point. But that's a very good question.
There are a couple of researchers who are working on looking specifically at women postpartum with the DEPP with a couple of modifications. Those data are not in either yet. But it's a really good question.
Heather?
Thank you.
www.cdc.gov/diabetes, and then there are maps for counties. Any other questions?
Yeah, there's, are there some more at the back table?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's plenty.
If any of you want to start a GDM project, please call Adeline and I. You know, who are you going to call?
It's going to be us too.
Well, thank you again for attending, and thank you again to all the panelists for a great presentation. Thank you.